Blog Talk Radio.
That's right. Don't adjust your television screens nor your computers or radios at this point. We're changing it up a little bit today. The End Zone Falcons on Super Pro Football Show is live on Blog Talk Radio thanks to Impact Media. But we're going to start with Falcons Zone today because we just want to shake it up. And as the song says, we do have all our hands in the air. And if we look carefully through our telescopes all the way down in Cancun, Mexico, we can see one Mr. Reggie Walker's hands way up in the air. We will hear from him in the next couple weeks. He's down on assignment. Coach, I don't know if, of course, we're here with Coach Haywood Hill. Appreciate you joining us, Coach. I don't know if you knew it, but I'm pretty sure Reggie's going to try to make the U.S. national soccer team, so he went down there to train.
Well, he's in a great place right now. Lots of sun and fun.
He is. He's probably working on his tan as we speak with a fruity drink and an umbrella.
I'm sure he is.
Must be nice, even though myself just got back in town too. But it was north instead of south. I'll have to work on that next time. But like I said, we are going to start with Falcon Zone here first. Of course, like I said, joined by the coach Haywood Hill. I am Jeremy, the Impact York. Thanks for joining us. And real quickly, we get a couple announcements out of the way. Get some of the few Falcons things. Not a lot going on, but two players we want to talk about a little later. First of all, congratulations to the 2015 Falcons cheerleader squad. It was announced the other day. We look forward to all the amazing things in the community and especially the cheering at the Dome that these girls will do. I know they work real hard. A lot of times don't get paid a whole lot, but it's just a kind of notch in the belt for a lot of them.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, that's a commendable job, and we always like to have, the cheerleaders to stand up. And I think what people fail to realize is how many of them have such, great professions. I mean, if you look at some of the bios of some of these young ladies, it's amazing what they do and how they find time to get, the time in for practice and to show up on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's quite a commitment. If you do look, a lot of them may be students in college studying to be things. But yeah, there's nurses, there's sometimes I've seen doctors on some of these squads. I met some of the ones from the Jaguars a couple years back, and just to hear some of their stories and all, you wouldn't believe the backgrounds they come from.
Yeah, I agree. I was impressed when I looked at some of the resumes over the last couple of years.
Definitely so. Maybe they'll let us judge next year. I feel like we got an eye for talent. Of course, we'd have to clear that with our legal department, so that could be our issue. But next big announcement is the fact that the June mini camp will be open to the public. So if you want to know when you can go see this year's Atlanta Falcons start to rise up, here's the easy days. It'll be June, it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday coming up in mid-June. It's the 16th, 17th, and 18th. On Tuesday and Wednesday, the gates will open at 12:10. That is just after noon. Practice will begin an hour later at 1:10. And the Thursday will be 9:55 a.m. with practice starting at 10:55. And the two things of note is parking is next door or right across the street at Hog Mountain Sports Complex. There's plenty of parking down there. And on that Wednesday is Kids Day. All kids under 18 are encouraged to participate in some of the festivities. There's giveaways, there's prizes. The cheerleaders will be there, and Freddie Falcon. And this is really the first big event of this fiscal NFL year where the Atlanta Falcons are allowing the fans in. So, I encourage people to go check them out.
Yes, it's a great marketing tool for the for the team, as well as getting the fans a little bit closer and having the players be a little more personable with the fans. So I think it's an excellent move on the Falcons organization part to open it up, especially with having the kids come out. Because, again, like I said, you know, a lot of these young men inspire to be some of the players that they look up to. So now what better way than to get them up close and personal?
Absolutely. And if we can sneak down there, we'll try to sneak down there and maybe get some exclusives. But if not, definitely stay tuned to us later this year. We're hoping to get some of the guys on. Now we'll get to these two players we really want to talk about. And they're both officially on the team now. We'll start, so far out of all the practices and mini camps that they have had, the Falcons seem to be really high on defensive tackle or nose tackle, really, Grady Jarrett, who we've talked about before. What do you really know about Grady?
Well, I know this young man comes out of Clemson. He had a very good coach up there. One of the things I think is surprising is his quickness. I mean, he's not very tall at the nose position like you would like. He's a little undersized for his frame. He has a remarkable body on him at nose. He's quite quick, but there are some things that he'll have to work on, and I'm sure that they're going to be working on his deficiencies early. One of the things that he gets caught sometimes with angle blocks, again, you know, being a little undersized. But the one thing about him is once he gets his body into you, he depends heavily on his burst. So once he takes that first 2 to 3 steps, he's into the body of the center. He's really very active. He has a very active motor, which it kind of compensates for, again, his size and his weight. But I think he's going to have a great career. He's very disruptive. He knows how to get to the backfield. And I think it's just a matter of him playing against those centers Sunday after Sunday. I give him no more than probably 5 games, and he's going to figure a lot of people out real quick. And I think he's going to be a great addition to Atlanta at that nose spot, because normally you get a big body and a run stopper, but in this case they have the luxury of him being able to fall off and do some other things where you normally pull noses out after first or second down. He's one of those guys that can easily be a 3-down player for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, he comes from the pedigree that Reggie reminded us of a couple weeks ago of, I believe he's the son of Jesse Tuggle, the great Falcons defensive player. So, you know, that kind of helps. He kind of knows what he's talking about. And as far as you with your coaching background can answer this a lot better than I can, but as far as the real difference between a defensive tackle and a nose tackle, obviously is a 3-4 and a 4-3. But the nose tackle, if I'm not mistaken, is his main purpose is to disrupt the center and the middle of the offensive line, correct?
Yeah, well, they both kind of share the same role, but the biggest thing is just depending on how you spread out a defense. If you're running in a 3-4, you want a little more athletic guy because you're spreading your defensive ends out. So his responsibility is not only, you know, both of those A-gaps, but he has to, you know, kind of be flexible in some things that he does. When you're running a traditional 4-3, it's a little more compact. He's just kind of focusing on making moves against the center and then also making sure that, you know, as they try to run their stunts, twists, and things up front, that that the other guy doesn't get caught or he doesn't get hooked. So one of the things, like I said, he brings to the game is his tremendous quickness, and that's one of the things that I think is his greatest attribute. Now it's being able to take that against very good centers that are smart, and who have watched a lot of film on him now, I'm sure, to find a way to strengthen his deficiencies. Some of the things you cannot fix his height. he has to watch his weight because, again, he can balloon a little bit if not careful. But I think, you know, having, you know, the background that he has, the school he went to, the coaching that he's had, I think he's above the curve right now. And I think that's one of the things that's going to help him right now.
Well, and also he's got his Clemson teammate also on the team right behind him, so maybe they can work as a 1-2 tandem and finally get an Atlanta pass rush.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure they're going to be something to see on the field this year.
We can only hope so, because there hadn't been an actual, you know, dominant or an actual pass rush really in Atlanta for probably 3 or 4 good seasons.
Yeah, that's true. So they most definitely need to work on pass rush this year, and I'm sure they made it their priority on their defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me, was pass rush, you know, really that important? And I said, well, here's the thing. If the opposing quarterback is not afraid of your pass rush, he'll sit back in the pocket all day long and beat you.
That is correct.
But moving on to our last real thing for the Falcons, and I even perused over their website just to make sure we didn't miss anything. The last thing is they signed an offensive tackle. Tyler Columbus was signed, and at 6'8", 308 pounds, he will add not just depth, but a lot of size to the offensive line. He recently, I believe he was drafted and played a little while in Denver, played in Seattle for a part of a year, and then for the last, make sure I get this right. He had a four-year stint with the Redskins where he started 42 of 47 games. In 2013, he started all 16 games at right tackle. He blocked for a rushing attack that tallied 2,164 yards. I'm pretty sure he can play either tackle position. I believe he can play guard as well, but at that size there, he could be the other bookend to Jake Matthews on this offensive line.
Well, I am curious to see why Washington let him go. If he's that productive in Washington, what are the things that are hidden there and why did they make that move? So I'm still kind of curious to see what comes of that. But most definitely he adds depth, considering that, they had Matthews hurt last year, toward the mid part of the season, and then they lost Baker early. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, that it definitely will. And as I said, it's going to be quick in Falcon Zone. We're actually pretty much done with all the stuff there. I'm going to peruse their site one more quick time, make sure we didn't miss anything. Of course, the NFL Network is going to release their top 100 tonight. Just a quick guess real quick. How many Atlanta Falcons do you think will top the NFL Network top 100 list from top players last year?
You know what? I'm going to go out on a stretch here, and I'm going to say at least probably four. I'm going to say four.
Man, I want to say three. I wanted to say four. I'm going to say two, and I'm actually going to call them out. I think they'll give Julio the nod, and of course Matt Ryan. So hopefully we're both wrong. Hopefully there's like 12 or something. But obviously they're going to keep going through the list. And we'll just have to stay tuned. I think it's a week long thing. They announce all the top 100. But for the coach, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys on the other side of the break for End Zone.
Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. Many packages available. We've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? The Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great food and more.
And that's right, it's time for the End Zone portion of the show at the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. I am Jeremy the Impact York. Welcome back. Joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. Yourself?
Doing pretty good. We ran through the Falcon Zone stuff as there's just not a lot going on in Falcons world, or at least not enough to report on. I mean, there's no reason to make up stories. We don't really do that here. And, of course, with our end zone theme there, we are opening it up to the public as far as if there's a song that you think fits us a little more. By all means, send in your submissions to Impact Media or at team – or God, what are we on Twitter? At the Impact 99. Just send it to me. Just any kind of suggestions you have. We are looking to kind of rebrand our song there. It's kind of, I think it's kind of ran its course. I think our recording's actually fading out. We've used it so much. But we will get into some end zone stuff. Of course, Ray Rice we'll talk about. We'll tell you who the finalists for the 2019 and 2020 Super Bowls are currently. Some Derek Carr news. But first, let's just go ahead and get it out of the way because at this point, we're all kind of tired of talking about it. The Deflategate update. Now, pretty much the easiest way to update us at this point is Robert Kraft made the statement after meeting with Goodell at somebody's 60th birthday, McManus maybe. I think he's a CBS employee. I can't think of his first name. But they met and talked for a solid hour or so, shook hands, hugged, and walked their separate ways. And then the following day, Kraft had a press conference where he said, as far as the Patriots were concerned, they weren't going to appeal the loss of draft picks or the fine. However, the NFL Players Association is still appealing the Brady suspension. Have you heard any more about this?
No, I haven't, but the one thing I do know is that when we talked about this earlier, before the verdict came down as to how they were going to handle the suspensions and or the consequences, one of the things we talked about in earlier shows were the fact that policies and procedures come down normally as a result of something happening. Again, I think the commissioner did a good job of getting all of the information. I think that the independent study that they've been doing outside of the league, bringing someone in who has the expertise in finding facts, and or dispelling myths and rumors has worked for the NFL. Now the question is, moving forward, what type of policy or procedure will be put in place when it comes to the football and also maintaining the integrity of the game? And that's the commissioner's job. So I think, as I predicted the four-game suspension a couple of weeks ago, I think moving forward what you will see happen is that the NFL will bring down in the competition committee a ruling that will state that all of the balls cannot be inflated for the game until they arrive at the facility. I think they will have one of the coaches from each team stand there. It won't be an offensive or defensive coordinator. It won't be a high-end coach, but they will have someone that will stand there as the balls are being inflated from the opposing team, kind of like what you see in boxing when they're doing the taping.
Right.
At that point, they will mark the balls just indiscreetly, 1, 2, 3, just on the, you know, on the tip nose of the ball. They will give that actual roster of the weights to the, that will go back to the coaches. And I think that when the balls are not in the field of play, they will be placed over near the replay booth, and I think those balls will remain there even at halftime. I think they'll give them 6 or 7 of those balls to toss around as they go through warm-ups. But that's, I can foresee that coming. That is the only way you're going to curtail anything like that happening. And at halftime, they'll reweigh those balls, again, because it will take them only a couple of seconds to make sure that they're at their appropriate weight. And I think that that's probably the most feasible thing to do as you move forward with that. I think that will just clear it out. In every game, you must bring uninflated balls to be basically pumped before game, maybe 2 hours before game.
Now, in no way, I'll go ahead and throw the disclaimer out. In no way do any of us here on the show or anybody that works for Impact Media, I'm just throwing some of these things out just for discussion's sake. But we're not saying anything guilty or not guilty or anything like that. But in Kraft coming out and addressing everything the way he did, is in some way he kind of saying that, maybe something happened or you know, maybe something happened and we don't want you to dig any further, or I'd rather this just go ahead and be over with?
Well, I think once he got an opportunity to look at the report, the investigation, and see it in its entirety, there were some things that probably red flagged. One of the things I think maybe red flagged was the fact that Mr. Brady wasn't as cooperative, which probably is, you know, brought about this. I'm sure it brought about the suspension. So those are, you know, at that point, once you look at all of the evidence and you've seen the track record of this investigator, I mean, he's a former FBI agent. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's been very versed in a lot of different situations in the NFL in his investigations. And I think at this point, I think it's a moot point to try to fight, because one of the ways that the organization could possibly come back, they could come back and say, well, if that was the case, when the ball was in the field of play, when the ball was in the air, it was fair game for anybody. And I think that did come up with one of the players who intercepted the ball or whatever. When he brought it back to the sideline, that's what brought about this discussion. So at this point, I don't think that it was worth an argument for the organization to continue to try to keep up with. At this point, you got to get focused on something else. You got to get focused on your upcoming season. You're the defending champions right now, and that's where they decided to just move on with that, because I think at that point, what were you going to argue? I mean, the investigation was done. The information was put in. The consequences were handed out. Now just move forward.
Right. That's what I think. Because the weird thing to me is we all know that Roger Goodell got his job because the 32 owners voted on it, and that's the representative they want, because they actually pay a salary as well. And Kraft, being pretty much the unofficial, more outspoken leader of the owners when it comes to these meetings, I think they didn't want this to tarnish the relationship that they have, and, you know, as far as moving forward and everything. And Kraft just, I think he decided to kind of cut his losses here and say, okay, as far as I'm concerned, our part of it's over with. We'll accept the penalty, and let's move on.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, as far as the NFL Players Association, they have the right to appeal Brady's suspension. Brady or his agent could easily give him a call and say, hey, drop it. But so far, we've yet to really hear any more from Brady's agent, as he kind of made his media rounds a week or so ago, and we haven't heard from Brady at all. He's probably still on vacation. But pretty much this thing won't be over until Tom Brady's suspension is either appealed and dropped, you know, reduced at some point, or he just accepts it and stays at the four games.
Yeah, I don't expect to see a reduction. I mean, I think at this point, all hands are on the table, all cards have been dealt. So, I mean, yes, that's what the union is supposed to do. They're supposed to do whatever they can to protect their, you know, to protect their investment, call the players. But in this case, I don't know. I mean, it's not for me to determine whether the balls were inflated, not inflated. The text messages were accurate, not accurate. There's information missing here and or there. I just think that they have just come to a realization, this is what it is. Is it worth putting the money, the time, the energy, and the focus on this now when you have to get ready for mini camp and training camp, which is basically around the corner?
Right. And like you said, they are the defending champions, so they know they're going to have to go back to work to repeat. But moving on, we will we'll get back into the NFLPA in a minute. Real quickly, there was an update in Ray Rice and his position in the league. His domestic violence charges were dropped today after he completed the necessary steps that he needed to. One in particular was to stay out of trouble for an entire year, which he was able to do. So is this just another step in the process to him being back in this league?
Absolutely. If you remember when this whole situation with Mr. Rice came down, one of the things that I said was going to have to happen, and it has happened, is that he had to do what we call the work. And again, he's done that. You know, again, there are things that are in place for domestic violence, that, like any other offense that a person can face, whether it's just league-related or not. And he's done that work now. And I think now that that has been completed, the teams that were looking for running backs or was hoping that this situation would get cleared before the season began, will now start to seek his services, and I wish Mr. Rice the best of luck in securing a contract and most definitely getting back onto the field of play.
And you can either attach a percentage out of 100 to this or a some related word or something. What are the chances that Ray Rice could be an Atlanta Falcon by season start?
I don't see that. I don't see that right now because of the way they went in the draft with some things. They still have a young running back group there. It's not doubtful, but I don't see it. And, again, it doesn't mean it can't happen, but, again, you'd have to do a lot of shifting with the money. Again, they have to start looking at what they're going to have to do when they come out of training camp. They don't know what injuries they're going to face as of yet. So bringing Mr. Rice to Atlanta would probably be would be something very quick to do. But I don't know, based on what you have to pay salary-wise for him right now, if that would fit into Atlanta's budget. I do think that he will land somewhere. That's no question. I mean, he's very salvageable. He was not hurt. And he's had a whole year to have his body get healthy from any ailments or, little nuances he might have had. But I don't see him in Atlanta right now. Again, like I said, things can change quickly, and they do happen quite fast in the NFL. But as of right now, Atlanta has to go through what they have and see where they really are at that position before they can make a move like that.
Yeah, I would say, I'm not going to say highly unlikely, but I would say unlikely at this point. We're talking probably in the 6% to 8% chance that he would be an Atlanta Falcon for the basic reasons you just said, but I figured I'd throw that out because I've had some Falcons fans, among other teams, but I've had some Falcons fans ask, what's the chances of him coming here and would he actually be a good fit? And for the type of game that Ray Rice plays, he can kind of fit with anybody as far as different kinds of schemes, but given where he is in his career, I wouldn't be that tempted to call him in right now.
Yeah, because you have a lot of that element on your football team now spread out across a number of backs. And the kid that they drafted from Indiana is the same type of running back. They have some of that now. They have that in Smith. They have that. So I'm not taking anything from Mr. Rice in saying this. I'm just saying that they have a lot of football players in that position right now, and they got to sift through that first to find the three and or four backs that they're comfortable with going into the season. Again, it doesn't mean that Mr. Rice might not end up an Atlanta Falcon, but it's hard to do that this early until you see everybody in pads and you go in day to day and watch your injuries and see what you got there. I don't think he's going to have a problem with finding a job. It's just where he wants to go at the end of the day and if they have room with inside of their budget called the salary cap to fit him in.
Absolutely. I still say one of his best opportunities may be in Jacksonville, but that's a different discussion for another show. Moving on. The NFL Players Association is, like I said earlier, I think, I don't know that they're looking to necessarily lock horns with the NFL this offseason, but it seems like they at least want to go over some formal grappling practice or something. Kind of missile number two they've sent towards the NFL is they filed a formal appeal on the Adrian Peterson situation, basically saying that the NFL and Roger Goodell have, quote, deliberately ignored, unquote, the court's decision from 11 weeks ago. And we were reading over their official press release a little earlier. Basically what they're saying is, between the NFL and the Players Association, they decided to take this to the arbitrator, decided to take it to the court, and when the court made the ruling, all the Players Association wants is for that ruling to actually start taking place.
Okay. At the end of it, what is it that they're really wanting for Mr. Peterson?
I think that from the looks of it, they are using Peterson as a representation of the players in general. And they're saying the delay tactics and inconsistencies and arbitrary decision making of the league. I'm kind of paraphrasing the bottom paragraph here, and this is straight off the NFLPA.com. website. It's hurting the rights of the players, the credibility of the league office, and the integrity of the collective bargaining agreement. I think pretty much I don't know exactly what they're really after. They don't really come out and say it. I've read four or five articles on it. Just for the most part, they want the court decisions to start happening a little faster than they are, but I think the NFL is actually in their rights to kind of delay this a little bit.
Well, here's where your problem comes in, if I'm hearing you correctly. The problem is not that he has not been the suspension has been lifted, but he has not been officially reinstated.
Right.
And so that's where the NFL has the upper hand. They might have lifted suspension for legal reasons, but the reinstatement is still solely upon the discretion of the league. So they have not reinstated him as of yet. I presume, if I'm hearing you correctly in this language, that's probably what has happened. And again, I'll stand corrected if I'm wrong on it. And so, because the suspension was an official thing, and that basically kept him from earning any monies. He was
right.
being paid. I think he was being paid the first half of the season with suspension. The second half, he didn't get paid for that. Now that they have officially covered the ground of the suspension, now the question is, when does he get reinstated so that teams can now make deals to either render his services or he returns back to Minnesota. So I think that's where the issue is right now. The issue is reinstatement, and that's something the NFL can take their time on because that has nothing to do with the legal process. He served the suspension is lifted, but the reinstatement process, again, that has to go through a different process altogether.
Right, yeah. Pretty much from what I gather from paraphrasing the rest of this, and it's because it's in lawyer speak, and I don't speak lawyer speak, so it's making it a little difficult to understand. But basically, they're waiting on the NFL to turn in the official paperwork to reinstate Mr. Peterson, and that's kind of what they're saying, that the NFL is dragging their feet on, and that it's it goes against the collective bargaining agreement. And I mean, they both kind of have good cases either way, but, you know, nothing's going to happen until the paperwork's in.
Right, and if you look at Mr. Rice's, to back up for a moment, you look at Mr. Rice's situation, it's the same thing. You know, the monies were paid to him, I think, from the Ravens as a result of some of the contractual agreements, but again, I think it was based upon this work being done that he just completed with the domestic violence thing that now they can move forward with the official reinstatement. So, verbally saying that we can reinstate you is one thing. Officially having the paperwork in so that teams can start rendering services is something totally different. So I think that may be where they have their sticking point right now without me knowing all of the facts.
Exactly. Basically, Roger Goodell and Eric Winston, who is the president of the Players Association, will probably have a lovely summer with a lot of picnics outdoors.
Yeah, they're going to be very busy, and I think this is probably the most active that the NFLPA has been in probably some time.
Right, but then again, in the last, calendar year or so, we've had so many, you know, just odd cases and just random things that have popped up it's not unwarranted that these, you know, they're actually talking about discussing these things. These were all, you know, one in a million style situations that all came up, and like five of them hit in the same offseason.
Yeah, which that's why you have a legal team and everybody's really burning the midnight oil, if you will.
Yep, absolutely. Moving on, we will talk about the new extra point rules. Now, basically, the way this works is when the coaches and owners have their yearly meetings. I think they're bi-yearly. They have two or three of them. A lot of times, the team will stand up with a presentation and say, hey, we'd like to change this rule for this reason, and here's our solution to it. If you don't give a solution, they pretty much throw it out anyway. As far as the extra point rule goes, there were three different versions with this. I'll tell you the version that they're actually going with that will actually have to be voted on, I believe, by the owners in a week or so, or the next couple weeks at their meeting, to see if it gets ratified or not. And I think the Player Association has to say something about it as well. Basically, after you score a touchdown, if you want to kick for the extra point, you will now be kicking from the 15-yard line, I believe, which makes it a 33-yard extra point attempt. Or the ball will be placed at the 1-yard line, and you can go for two. Now, given the way that particular rule reads, what would be your guesses to the team or coach who came up with that?
Well, I'm not quite sure what team or coach came up with it, but one thing for sure is you're going to probably see a little more excitement in the game when you start seeing more two-point conversions, because it's not something normally you see in a game plan. I mean, you have it in a game plan as a coach, but it's normally you're pulling on that when it's at the end, toward the end of a game, to tie and or win it. So I think what you're going to see now is a lot more of the two-point conversions being added in. It's just an extra play that you do, whether it's a pass play or a run game play. But you're going to see probably a little bit more of that come to the forefront to work against. And it'll be on the section of the play call sheet under the goal line or extra points. You'll see it there. I think if you try to back a kick up too many times, you got to think about how many times in a game, percentage-wise, a kicker's going to be kicking that 33-yard, and do you want to kick his leg out, you know? And, again, that would depend on, you know, if he has a dual role, if he's a short or your long-range field goal kicker. That also is something that teams have to think about when they're looking at their roster move. Are we going to carry two kickers as a result of that? So it's going to be quite interesting to see what comes of it before they make it official.
Well, I'll give you a couple clues here as far as the team and or coach that came up with it. For one, to me, I usually narrowed it down to four as soon as I heard the rule, and then when they tell me who it was, I wasn't surprised. But let's see, clue number one, this guy's known for a very kind of explosive, fast, chaotic playbook. And the coach happened to sign a player that is perfect for these two-point attempts.
Let me take a chance and say the Philadelphia Eagles.
You got it. It was Chip Kelly who came up with this, because he does have Mr. Tim Tebow, Mr. Two-Point Conversion, if this rule takes place.
Okay, then there you have it.
Yep, and... Because when they first said the rule, and like you said, it adds excitement, it adds intrigue. I'll actually tell you the flip side argument I came up with that could actually have the Players Association right back with missile number three this summer. But when I first heard that, I thought it's either Belichick, it's Sean Payton, or it's Chip Kelly. It's one of those three that are looking to find an interesting advantage there, and sure enough, it was Chip Kelly. But I look for the Players Association to file a formal complaint on behalf of field goal kickers, that this will actually diminish their role in games to a point, and make it to where kickers are almost a dime a dozen, and it'll make the turnover on kickers probably double.
Yeah, I agree, because if you start finding a team that becomes very successful on a high percentage rate, then you're going to start questioning whether or not you want to, you know, can you find a kicker that can do two things? If a kicker can punt and a kicker can kick for you, then that's going to reduce the number of players at that position. Because, again, with the injuries that you see year in and year out, it's going to be interesting to see what comes of it.
Yep, that's the only complaint I could see. And to me, they do have a legitimate argument there as far as protecting the field goal kickers. But I think the Players Association is a little busy at the moment, so it could be later in the year. And for one, this hasn't passed yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving on to our next thing, we're going to rifle right through these things. The NFL has announced the finalists for the 2019 and 2020 Super Bowl. They have it narrowed down to four cities, and those four cities being Miami, Tampa Bay, New Orleans, and Atlanta. So there's a 50-50 shot that there will be a Super Bowl within minutes of where we're doing this show.
I think Atlanta will win it. I think Atlanta will win it just based on the fact that they have the newest facility. I think that's what's going to push them over the top. And I think that was the whole purpose in building this, is to shoot at those type of games.
Yeah, I think Miami's going to be the other one as well, because they have been they spent most of the offseason renovating Dolphin Stadium down there, and it looks pretty nice.
Yeah, so I think it'll be, if I had to choose today which two facilities probably would be the strongest two contenders, it would be Atlanta and Miami, with Atlanta probably winning it out.
Right. I think Atlanta will probably be 2019. I think Miami will be 2020, with probably New Orleans or Tampa being the year after that.
Yeah. I can see that.
Next thing off the block is Derek Carr of the Oakland Raiders actually injured his ring finger on his throwing hand. How big is this injury this early in the offseason?
Well, it is of some concern because, again, you don't have your starting quarterback working with the ones, and more especially as they are plugging in pieces like Amari Cooper, your first-round pick. So it does slow some things down. But, again, if it doesn't require the surgery, if he can just rest it, if it's based on a tendon that he might have pulled or strained severely, those are the things that are being played. But I think that if you're going to get injured and it's not season-ending, now is the time for that type of injury to happen because he can still kind of get to the backside of OTAs, get his strength back, get his timing down, and get ready for preseason. So, you know, there's still room for something like that, even if it required surgery, depending on how long it would take for him to rehab the hand back. That would be the key to that. But I think he has time right now, and they can still evaluate it, you know, day in, day out.
Right. I think these are going to be okay. Like I said, as far as, getting to know Amari Cooper or something like that, I think they'll be okay. He'll be fine to go in a month or so. And speaking of those Miami Dolphins that we mentioned just a minute ago, where a Super Bowl could be headed their way soon. Now, of course, we want to move to they are actually paying their quarterback. Not that they don't pay quarterbacks, but seems to be the going rate that if you're a little above average at least, like an Andy Dalton or so, that you're now getting your big money. And as Ryan Tannehill's contract was, I think he's in his last year, so he's in that same category as I think Russell Wilson and Andrew Luck, RG3, all those guys. They're actually giving him an extension through 2020. Which could be obviously the year the Super Bowl's there. It's adding 4 years and $77 million to the overall deal he has, which means in the next 6 years he'll be making $96 million with $45 million guaranteed. As far as I can tell, this is just the going rate for above average quarterbacks at this point, or are they extremely overpaying this guy?
Well, I think if you ask the player, they don't feel they're being overpaid. I think if you ask their agent, they most definitely don't feel they're being overpaid. But again, one of the things you have to look at is when I hear these, you know, these incredible numbers, is how much of that will the quarterback have to give back over time? Your initial end-out number was $96 million with only $45 million of guarantee. Well, that's a lot of money to be guaranteed over the next, 6 years of that, of the length of that contract. But with that being said, also, you have to go back and restructure at some given point because if you don't, then there's nothing left in your cap. So it just kind of depends on how this whole thing is structured. You know, the $45 million is a part of it that he's guaranteed. And again, he's put up some decent numbers, and I think that Miami is moving in that direction. You know, they're a young team; they played very well this past year, and I think they were just one or two pieces off of being where they wanted to be in contention. But now, with that being said, they've secured their quarterback; they are satisfied as an organization as to what Tannehill has done for them, and I think with him inking that contract, they approved it.
Yeah, I think so, and I'll ask you this question after I tell you where I rank him. I got him as kind of a sleeper pick as a possible top 10 quarterback in this league. I like a lot of things he does. I think, kind of like Derek Carr is going to be in Oakland, you can't account, everything to him just for the simple fact that, the lack of pieces around him sometimes can diminish his numbers, but Ryan Tannehill has actually been, not just above average. He's been pretty solid and pretty much been kind of their official, unofficial franchise guy ever since they drafted him. So, I mean, I'm never going to say that some players shouldn't try to go get all the money he can. I'm definitely not going to say he's overpaid. That's just my opinion, I guess. But where do you rank him as far as the other quarterbacks in the league?
Well, I mean, he still has a long way to go. I mean, one thing that these rookie contracts do is they give an opportunity to look at the quarterback over what I consider a fair amount of time. Again, the next move now is, because he's solidified, what does he do now to prove that the investment was well spent? So now the pressure will be on to perform as a, you know, $96 million man, if you
right.
will. So right now I still think that this is the year where I will be able to basically make a statement like that about Tannehill, because last year, again, they were building. The last 2 years they've been building. But this year is the year I'll be able to say where he ranks. It's still early because, again, you know, he can come out the first three games and sit out the rest of the season. So we really don't know. But I think he's slowly making a climb up the ladder. Again, there are a lot of quarterbacks out there, a lot of good quarterbacks out there. And I think I will be able to best assess him after this year, because I think all of the pieces will be in place for them to realistically look at the team, their roster, and the health of that team.
Yeah, I would say that once you lock up your quarterback like this for the foreseeable future, you need to make sure to build around him. And they've added some wide receiver depth. But I'm looking over their running back core, and it's nothing personal to them, but besides Jay Ajayi that they drafted this year out of Boise State, it's nothing personal to these other four guys, but they may want to see if Ray Rice wants to come to Miami, because that would be a good 1-2 punch to take a little pressure off of Ryan Tannehill and allow him to play his game.
Yeah, that's true, and I don't know if Adrian Peterson has solidified in his situation with the Vikings as of yet, or if
that's
he's
true.
Something
that's
to shop on the table later. So it's going to be interesting to see how they work this out.
But I do think that maybe another offensive lineman would help, but also I think if they can solidify their running game, then they can easily compete with Buffalo and a couple other teams for a possible wild card this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. And who's to say that that conversation with Mr. Rice and his team has not taken place already behind the scenes with that organization? I mean, I think he'll be a good fit for them as far as an immediate plug into what they need in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not. That's why I didn't mention the other four on the list. I don't want to diminish them in any way, but just from the four that I'm reading here, they're kind of they haven't met expectations of what they were supposed to be, so that's why I didn't really put them in a high category. But we'll move to our last topic, and it could be kind of an issue, and I'm hoping in the next couple weeks some of our friends of the show out in the Bay Area can call in and weigh in on this. Maybe they know more than we do, but the 49ers had defensive tackle Justin Smith retire. Now, typically players retire about this time of year all the time. The only issue I see with this is that linebackers Patrick Willis and Chris Borland have already retired earlier this year. And then they had four other players from their defense that are on different teams, with Ray McDonald being a Chicago Bear, Parrott Cox is a Tennessee Titan, Dan Scuda is in Jacksonville, and Chris Culliver is in Washington. To me, that's six or seven of your starters on defense that are out of town right now. Should San Francisco be worried? Because to me, they're not in a good division to not have a defense.
Well, I don't know if they should be worried, but I must most definitely say that was a big hit against their defensive core. And again, I don't know quite what they're going to do unless they have come to the conclusion as a organization it's okay for us to start over again. And maybe that's what they're doing. You know, again, we'll have to wait and see, but that's a lot of players to lose at one time on one side of the football. So unless they're comfortable with knowing that they're going to be rebuilding over the next two, possibly 3 years defensively, then if that happens, one of the things that it does, it puts a lot of pressure on the offense to keep them in football games and to score, score, score. So I think once we get to preseason and we look at their wands, I think right now it's a great place if you're a football player to go and show your, you know, your skill set, because the door is open with all those positions being open.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm actually going to go the bold prediction for right now. I don't think Colin Kaepernick finishes this season as a 49er. I think they are going to start to kind of think about the future. I already thought he wasn't going to be on the team anyway, you know, to finish out the year. But now might be the time to try to move him to a possible borderline, you know, riding the fence contender. He could go somewhere and be the quarterback for that team and maybe take him to the playoffs. And it would be a good time. He's got a real team-friendly contract that, if you know, a lot of teams would easily pick that up.
Well, I don't know if they're going to let him out of his situation in San Francisco so quick. I think he'll probably have to do at least another year there before that becomes the case. But again, it's going to be interesting to see what they have planned for the 49ers in their future. I mean, unless they have a lot of young guys that were already on the cusp last year, ready to go, and they're comfortable with that. But Coach Gruden is a very good football coach. I'm sure they've looked at it. I'm sure they talked about it. I'm sure they discussed it. And surely, I'm thinking Washington with him being that particular player. But again, with the 49ers, it's just going to be, I think they're just going to have to go through that whole rebuilding process defensively. And so I don't want people to be upset with them because of what has happened. But again, it happened for a reason. And obviously, Kaepernick's contract plays a role in this. I don't think it plays a humongous role with all of those players, but I'm sure it played a role in some of those players. So it's going to, you know, the 49ers, it's going to be interesting to see what they do this year. They lost a lot of good talent, actually on both sides of the ball, if you look at it. You know, they lost a tremendous amount of players over there, and I think that was one of the decisions that the former head coach had to look at, too, going down the stretch when you're talking about negotiations. How many of these guys are going to be around with his football team in the next 2 to 3 years?
Right, and that's Coach Tomsula that took over there in San Francisco. And that was what I was going to mention, is that, you know, a lot of people weren't sure with the Jim Harbaugh situation when he was pretty much ran out of town unofficially by my possible family tree members. I'm still looking into that one. But running Jim Harbaugh out, a lot of people thought, you know, let's see how many players stick around. Well, apparently, you know, 4 defensive players go to other teams as free agents. 2 linebackers retire. Chris Borland's situation had nothing to do with Harbaugh. Patrick Willis's could have. And, you know, now Justin Smith, he may have went to the early minicamps here and said, yeah, I don't like this situation. I'm already in my 30s. Why don't I just go ahead and retire?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, that's a lot of players to lose on top of what they probably are going to lose offensively as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do this year. I mean, Mr. Kaepernick has his hands full offensively this year, and the 49ers have a lot to be working on, you know, in this offseason to get themselves ready to compete this season.
Right, and I actually have one last thing. I come up with it. It actually popped in my head when we were talking about the Falcons. So, real quickly, I'll get you to put your coach hat on. And as a coach in the league, it doesn't matter which of the 32 you happen to be on. I'm going to read out these 4 quick things that have happened to teams in the last couple years. And you kind of rank them as to how devastating to the game these things really are. Like how serious an incident they really are. And when I read them, you'll kind of see what I'm talking about. We have an owner texting to the sideline. We have artificial crowd noise being pumped in. We have deflating footballs for play. And we have paying players to injure other players. As far as the severity, which one of these, as a coach, you know, concerns you more?
Most definitely paying players to injure other players. I mean, you're talking about the livelihood of an athlete, where he has spent 20 years of his life getting to that point, and not knowing how long he's going to be able to sustain his profession. So that by far would rank number one for me. The second one would probably be the deflation of the footballs, because again, that can change the game as far as the ability of a quarterback being able to hold a ball a little bit more. You're not going to be able to knock it out of his hand or fumble it as quick when he has a better grip on the football because it's smaller. That would be probably number two. Number three for me would be the texting. At that point, you basically are saying that your coaching staff, you can bypass your coaching staff and talk directly to me, which makes it very difficult, and you're in a game doing this, which by far is a distraction. I don't think that, you know, that there's room for that right there on the sideline. And last but not least, I know you spoke of the crowd noise, the artificial crowd noise, and I don't see how that helped at all, because, again, it did not help Atlanta win any more football games.
No.
So, I mean, and I don't even know how they figured this out. I mean, what was the how did they come up with the determinant? Who was the team or who was the organization, or how did they come up with this artificial crowd pumping noise investigation? What brought it about, and the organization and or organizations that brought this about, did they lose the football game as a result of it? I guess that's my next question.
Right, and given the way the Falcons played those two seasons that they supposedly did it, I mean, it could only be a handful of teams that actually lost to them in those times. So, I mean, we could easily narrow down if it was a team, but I heard that it was like a league official who just happened to be in a certain area and somehow just started to, I guess, Scooby-Doo mystery, put it together and started asking questions and pointing fingers and kind of figured out that there was an artificial crowd noise button or something.
Yeah, but I mean, but I guess when you do, when you're saying that, okay, then what do you do when you go to a place like Seattle where it's going to be that? It's going to be louder than what you were able to pump in. So, I mean, I guess everybody wants a competitive edge. There are gray areas when there's no rule in place for it. But how do you monitor it moving forward? I mean, again, the Falcons have not won a Super Bowl, no pun intended, but I don't think it helped them any. You know, I don't see where it gave them this huge advantage as you would find with a deflated football or, you know, anything like that, if you would, or just basically taking a player out. So I don't see where that offense can, you know, measure to against other offenses that you see. You know,
right.
I mean, I don't know.
Right, and I would even argue that as far as the texting of the sideline, yeah, I understand it's just kind of dumb and it shouldn't have happened. But the team involved with that was the Cleveland Browns, who, besides the Atlanta Falcons, it's not like it really helped them either. So, I mean, none of these four things should have happened. But ultimately, the thing that gets me, and I'll bring it up real quickly because we'll get out of here in a few minutes, but Sean Payton, who said he knew absolutely nothing about the whole players getting paid to injure, whether he did or whether he didn't, the NFL come out and said ignorance is not an excuse, and he had to sit out a year. Then as far as deflating footballs, Belichick says he doesn't know anything about it. How come there's no penalty there?
Well, who's to say that doesn't come back up? That's maybe probably why Mr. Kraft, in his wisdom, decided to not look at appealing the fine. Because, again, to get out of a hole, you must stop digging. And so I think, again, that could come back. You know, who's to say that this is over? Who's to say it's not over? I don't think his name was ever implicated in any of this. I don't think there was any reference to the coach knowing anything about it. I think they were able to go through that process and find out who might have had knowledge or was aware. But again, it doesn't mean someone later down the line, and again, that's a good point as to what happened with Coach Payton down in New Orleans, it could come back to haunt. I don't think it will, but again, who's to say it won't? I guess that's where the other information is yet to be seen.
Yep, absolutely. And since I want to end on a good note here, I will end by saying not only do I appreciate you, Coach Hill, for joining me here on in End Zone and Falcon Zone, but I want to give special shout-outs to pretty much just the city of Chicago for being very hospitable last week, and Buckle Down Brewery, the Brookfield Zoo, and a bunch of other places that opened their doors for all the people I was with, and we had a great time up in Chicago. We were able to get some stuff done and help some people out. So just want to say that if people are looking for a fun place to go and you can't make it to Atlanta, which is our favorite town, of course, definitely go check out Chicago. There's a lot of fun things going on there. Coach, you have anything to add?
I do. I just want prayers to go out to Adrian Robinson's family, the young man that passed away, that played with the Denver Broncos and a couple other teams in the NFL. Our prayers go out to his family and his former teammates as well.
Absolutely. So it was a tragic loss for sure, especially to lose somebody in the brotherhood here. But that's going to do it for us on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks. Hope you guys enjoyed it. You know, maybe Reggie's training will be done and he'll be able to join us as well. So for the coach, Haywood Hill, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week or in 2 weeks.
It's funny, 'cause it's true.